This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. On this morning's show, I want to do kind of an overview of the so-called right way to be a sports parent. And, you know, thinking about this, it all starts with what's known as daddy ball. Now, that might sound terribly obvious to many of you, but I continue to get so many emails and calls and tweets about what is appropriate parental behavior and what's the right kind of parental expectations we should have for our little kids as they start out in sports. And again, we've heard this term for a number of years now, daddy ball, and it encompasses a lot of different types of angles and insights and behaviors when it comes to parents and how they handle, how they treat their kids and other kids when it comes to playing youth sports. Now, again, the term is, let's face it, it is focused on daddy, but obviously I'm sure there are some moms who are in the mix as well, but it's a generic term meaning that parents who don't seem to understand the right priorities when it comes to working with youngsters. And the concerns, you know, they focus on, well, I hate to use this term again, but a sense of entitlement when it comes to, let's say, volunteering to coach at the youth level in elementary school or working with kids of different ages and different abilities. Too often, the dad who runs the team is very, very nice, and he seems, at least at first, to want the very best for all the kids on the squad. But we know as the games begin to play out, you sometimes, watching from the stands or the sidelines, you get the sense that the coach is unfortunately more focused on winning the games than making sure that every youngster plays the same amount of time or that all the kids rotate through all the various positions on the field that the coach, that his kid ends up being the team captain or makes the all-star team and so on and so forth. This is the world of daddy ball, where the parent, the dad who serves as the head coach, sometimes feels entitled that the team exists solely to help promote his own kid's career. And, you know, it's a real problem. And I want to talk about this today because I do have a sense that so many of the issues that eventually pop up as a kid gets to be in middle school or into high school, a lot of those issues have their direct roots when it comes to the way they were worked with when their dad was coaching them in youth ball. And again, I understand that there are a lot of wonderful moms and dads who do volunteer as youth coaches and do a great job and keep their priorities in perspective and treat all the kids equally. But you and I know the reality is that there's too many daddies out there who want to make sure that that team exists to make sure that their kid has the platform to become the next star. I do believe that daddy ball awareness has been raised in recent years. There's still that lingering sense, though, that this kind of favoritism, or as I say, entitlement, still exists in our communities. And I'm going to get your thoughts about this morning. 1-877-337-6666. You know, I will even go on and say that it seems to me that many dads who start off in the world of daddy ball are the ones who go on to become hyper-involved in their kid's sports as the kid gets older. And the parents, the daddy, will press whatever they can to do, often in a very sly and subtle manner, to make sure their son or daughter gets every little edge they can. And again, this is a real concern. Let's talk about it. Let's start our conversation this morning with our friend Jack Smithlin over in Fair Lawn, New Jersey. Jack, good morning. How are you today?
How are you, Rick?
Good.
And God, I think this is the first time I've been on first. That's pretty cool. daddy ball is, it's something that actually, I've lived it. I was both my sons, my younger son didn't want me to coach him. But my older son, Zach, he did. And, I was one of the lucky ones when it comes to that entitlement issue, because Zach was one of the better players on the field at all times. So, parents sitting in the stands really didn't have any questions whether he should be playing, where he was playing. But I moved him around. He was a pitcher. He played a little outfield. He was a middle infielder as a kid. But and I also took him out of games. I was a high school coach basically at the same time that my sons started growing and I was coaching them. So I had a philosophy, you play your nine best players. And, but at the little league level and the younger levels, you got to get everybody playing time, which we did.
Right.
But daddy ball is a title that people think of, and exactly the way you introduced it, with entitlement, that people favor their sons. And, at the beginning, parents, like you said, volunteer their time. And, I remember one quote I heard from a movie once: there's no bigger heart than the heart of a volunteer. But what happens is that when the volunteer is now siding and playing their son, but here's something that I would like to, give some advice to all the people out there. I've lived through the T-ball and the little league and the middle school ball and high school ball and college ball. I'm now coaching at the college level. And even Zach played pro ball for 8 years. And it doesn't leave. Because what happens is that daddy ball becomes booster ball when we get to high school. And it's always the person who's given the most money to the booster club. Sometimes the coaches favor those kids. And then when you get to college, it becomes scholarship ball. The kid is on the biggest scholarship. They feel they have to play because they're spending the most money on him. And then once again, when you get to pro ball, and my son, I've lived through this with my son at pro ball, where, I felt and many people felt he was one of the best center fielders defensively. He could hit, he could run. And then what happened? He was playing minor league ball with the Cardinals, and a player came up that was a high round draft pick, second or third round, $1 million signing baby, and he took over in center field, and Zach had to fight his way back in. So it doesn't leave you. It stays with you. But the parenting part of it, you're absolutely right. You see so many people that their kids feel they're entitled at a younger age, and as they move up the ranks, they feel that entitlement. You know what? You got to face it. And here's something that one of my suggestions. When you're facing a daddy ball situation and you know that your chances are slim to none of your son or daughter playing shortstop because the coach's kid plays, find a new position. Find a new position. Because if you're that good, you're going to play, But you might be growing up as a shortstop like Zach did. And then all of a sudden, the scout comes along and says, "Oh, this kid has speed. Throw him in the outfield." And now you got to go out and buy another $300 glove. But the point is that find another position. Be that type of player that can play anywhere. And I think this is a great topic because. And here's one other thing before I get off. What happens is that when parents get upset and their sons or daughters are not playing in any sport, soccer, volleyball, hockey, and they say, we're getting out of here, we're starting a new team.
Yep.
A new daddy ball team starts. So it's like a cancer. It's just growing and growing and growing. So great topic today, Rick.
Jack, thanks as always for your thoughts, and I appreciate them. We'll talk to you again soon. And just to follow up on Jack's numerous points you just made. Yeah, that's what happens. A lot of the and again, I talk about it being sort of an insidious, subtle process. The daddies who decide that this is going to be the youth leagues are going to be the platform to grow their kids' abilities. They're the ones who start the local travel team, because now they can basically control, as the kid gets into later years, elementary school, even middle school. Now that daddy can control the team, can decide who's, you know, obviously the team is going to be built around his son or his daughter. Then they're going to make sure that the kids' friends are on the team, and then they can have tryouts for all the other kids that fill in the rest of the roster. But again, it's all about, you know, the daddy who feels a sense of entitlement, and of course, too many moms and dads fall victim to the fact that they don't understand what's going on here, and all of a sudden they realize they paid money for the tryout, they paid money to be in the team, and next thing you know, they see their son, their own son or daughter, not getting much playing time because it's all about winning and basically highlighting daddy ball's son or daughter on that team. It is, as I said, it's a very difficult situation to be involved in. Let's move on to Pat over in Bergenfield. Good morning, Pat. You're next up on the Fan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. You know, it's interesting. When I heard this topic, I had to dial in. I grew up experiencing in Little League the same situation. And when it came time for me to coach my son, yeah, I was fortunate that I was able to get a Division I baseball player to assist me. And the other guy who assisted me was an accountant. So he ran the books, and the other fellow did a lot of the coaching. Now, as the year ended, we would give out trophies for batting average and all of this. Now, I would have thought my son was somewhere maybe fourth, third, or fourth. Turns out he had the highest batting average. And I guess the takeaway for me was, since in the back of my mind, and you never forget when that type of that daddy ball situation occurs, because of that, I just subconsciously didn't give him the due that he was entitled to. The fact that, you know, he had the best batting average, I wouldn't have guessed it in a million years. And now, as a grandparent, I watch my grandkids play in certain sports, and absolutely, I see the same thing, and I have to sit there with my mouth shut, because the last thing I want to do is to be asked to leave the field.
Right. Yeah, Pat, it's and you make a good point there, a good observation about your own son and now as a grandparent, but I think the one takeaway, and thank you for the call this morning, the one thing I really like about what you said is, and I think this may be a way to sort of put the brakes on daddy ball, and that is to have a high school or a college kid be as either the head coach or very much involved with the youth level teams, because the kids, first of all, the younger kids are going to respond more to a high school varsity player or a college kid than they are to parents. Second of all, the high school or college player in that sport is going to be much more knowledgeable about teaching the sport and dealing with the frustrations that young kids go through. And the third thing is, you know, if they're a high school varsity player or a college player, quite frankly, they're probably better qualified to work with the youngsters than a volunteer coach, and that sort of derails situations where we have problems with entitlement or parents who are trying to really propel their own kid onto the next level with daddy ball. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Let's move on quickly. Let's go to Brian over in Westfield. Hey, Brian. Good morning. You're next up on the Fan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think one of the challenges as coaches is I think you always have that, you know, daddy ball mentality in the back of your mind. And I think we as coaches struggle. I coach female sports, and I'm constantly trying to be aware of not playing my child too much in relation to the other players. And I think I almost do my child a disservice because, she may be a good player, but I'm constantly, you know, struggling with that daddy ball mentality. I just love to hear your thoughts on how to manage that.
Well, I will tell you, when I was going through my years as a youth coach, I used to keep a very detailed record every game of a list on like a scorecard or a clipboard, every kid on the team, and let's say it was soccer, and we would play quarters in those days. I have every kid listed on the roster on this clipboard, and we would keep track basically to make sure every kid played at least three quarters of each game, and they played different positions, whether they were playing, you know, fullback or they were playing forward or a goalkeeper. I made sure they all rotated around, and I made sure that all of them sat out a quarter, and that particularly applied to my son or my daughters when they were playing, because I didn't want any mom or dad ever to come to me and say, you know, you're playing daddy ball here. Your kids are getting the lion's share of all the time. And that's what I did to ensure, because I could always show them the scorecard and say, here's how all my kids played, and here's how much my kid played, and these positions they played, and these positions your kid played as well. And that tended to sort of stop and silence any critics. All right, let me take a time out. We're talking about daddy ball today and how to combat that and how to raise sensitivity about it. Let me take a time out. Dave Uraham has your update this morning. When I return, I'll go right back to your calls. Stay with me.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And welcome back to the Sports Edge. This is Rick Wolf. We're talking this morning about daddy ball. Daddy ball's been around for a number of years now, and it's, as we say, it's kind of a label that's applied to dads primarily, but I'm sure there are moms who volunteer as coaches as well, who basically are seeing, even at the youngest ages, when kids get involved in youth sports, that they see the team they're coaching as really just sort of a vehicle, a platform, if you will, for their own youngster to progress to a higher level. And as a consequence, we hear things about entitlement. We're basically the coaches saying, yeah, I'll play all the kids and everything and so on and so forth. But, you know, at crunch time, I want my kid to be getting the most playing time, or I want my kid to be the team captain, or my kid gets the choice of the uniform that he or she wants to wear, and so on and so forth. This all begins to creep in at an early age, and unfortunately, it continues on into travel teams, and even has some extensions into high school as well, where by that point, the daddy ball personality has sort of trying to ingratiate him or herself to the varsity coaching staff to make sure their kid is recognized as one of the rising stars. It can be really quite annoying and jarring and disruptive. And we're taking your calls about this because something has to be done to sort of educate all parents as to how wrong and how insidious this is. 1-877-337-66 is our number. Let's go to our friend Ed over Ed Ward over in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. I know you're involved in this in terms of coaching and working with kids in high school and college. Ed, what do you make of all this?
Well, again, it seems like more and more there's travel teams coming about, and again, as you use the term daddy ball and all that.
Yep.
You know, the question is, are they coaching because they want to coach and they know the game? Or, again, as we said, they're just doing it to play their kid, bat them in the top of the lineup or whatever sport there is. I like to share a situation where my brother was a CYO basketball coach. He coached my nephew. They had a good team. They were very good. But my nephew was always – He was one of the better players also, but he was always the first substitute to always come out of a game. Unless someone got in foul trouble, whatever. If the game was in a blowout situation early in the first half, the kids that are usually like the bottom tier players, he'd get them in as part of the first half also. And he would do that at the end of the game also in a situation. So they all felt part of the game. But then again, naturally, if it was a little closer or whatever, Then the roles change or whatever. But he always used to still, substitute for my nephew right away and all that stuff. I guess, you know, to make sure everyone didn't think that he was the father coaching coaching their own kids and all that stuff. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
It is a tough situation. You're basically at those levels, in a lot of situations, you're looking to coach to make the players better because you enjoy it and all that. But sometimes parents don't get it, and right away after a game they want to talk to the coach, this and that, you as a coach know this. We'd always want to quiet time for 24 hours if you want to talk to me or whatever on that, it could be a tedious situation, depending on what happened in the game.
Ed, I hear you loud and clear, and thank you for bringing up that situation about, you know, your nephew being be the first one to be taken out of the game. Ed, thank you for the call this morning, because that reminds me of a story I've told on the air a few times in the past, and that has to do, again, with the coach. You know, if you're the head coach of a youth-level team, you have to be sensitive to the feelings of the other parents in the stands or sidelines watching the game, because they come to watch the games to watch their own son or daughter perform. Not necessarily, they don't care about the team winning or losing, and they sure as heck don't care about watching your own son or daughter getting a lot of playing time and being the star of the game. I can recall very vividly when my own son was, probably in fifth grade. And by fifth grade, you know, it was clear some kids were athletes, some were not so athletically inclined to that age or hadn't developed yet. But I remember very distinctly I was coaching a youth level baseball, and it was opening day, and my son was a pretty good ball player, and everybody knew that I was the coach of the team. And we had 14, 15 kids on the roster, and, you know, nine played. And it was opening day, a lot of fanfare, you know, a parade in town, that kind of stuff. And sure enough, I went to my son John and I said, look, I know you're eager to play and go out there and start and so on and so forth, but I got to tell you, somebody has to sit out the first half of the game, and you're going to be one of those five kids who are going to sit out. And he was, you know, obviously heartbroken and disappointed because, Dad, I'm a good ball player. I want to play. I want to start. And I said, John, you will get plenty of playing time this year. Don't worry about that. But right now, you're going to sit in the bench to start the game, and I'll bring you in, you know, in the fourth inning. And, you know, the games were six innings long. And it sent more than a message to the other parents who are watching everything, thinking, well, this guy Wolf, I guess he's not going to be a daddy ball guy because he's not even starting his own kid. And that's exactly the kind of message I was trying to send, because I didn't want them to think I was going to be, you know, have a sense of entitlement or take advantage of being the head coach and so on and so forth. And again, that's why I say, if you're a youth level coach, you have to be totally aware of all this and really bend over backwards to do the right thing, to make sure all the other parents realize you're not playing favorites, that you don't have a sense of entitlement. And that's how you try to nip this in the bud right from the get-go. And again, as the season went on, we were fine. My son got plenty of playing time, just like all the other kids on his baseball team. Let's continue. Let's go to Ralph over in Cliffside Park. Hey, good morning, Ralph. You're next up on the Fan.
Hey, Rick. Been dying to talk to you. I've been coaching over 45 years. I got the spectrum from starting in the 70s. And I have plenty of stories that are pretty heart-wrenching. The one time I was coaching just a rec team, seventh grade team. We were undefeated, winning games by a lot.
Yep.
There were no two lines back then. So I played everybody. Had an autistic kid on the team. And we were going to the championship. One of the parents who was donated one of the big pockets to the group said, if you play that kid anymore, we're pulling the money, and this is how it's going to be.
Oh.
So this is recreation now, not travel. I said, well, if you're worried about it, you know, do CYO, do AAU. This is back in late 70s.
Yep.
So he was loved. I played him anyway, so I said to her, you could take your son, and you could see the joy we have. We're winning by 20 points. What are you worried about? He's in there, people are clapping, and it was I think it kept me from working with kids who don't have a lot. I worked with kids from single parents, handicapped kids. I was like, what are you talking about? This is back in the 70s. And then in 2000, with my daughter and her friends, they were all AAU travel girls soccer team. Unbelievable. They saw the stress coming. They were like, so all of a sudden, coaches changed, I got divorced, and the whole starting team quit soccer to run cross country because there was no, well, ball thing. You ran on your own. It's me against the run.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them didn't want the team competition. Dad, I've had it. You're getting a scholarship, Division II. I've had it. I can't take the pressure. I'm getting anxiety. I'm like, wow, the parents are killing these girls, and because of the Section 9 or whatever it was, where the girls got more scholarships than the boys.
Yeah, Title IX, right.
I was like, the stress on the girls. I see girls lacrosse in Long Beach, one of the greatest rec towns in Long Island. These girls are playing four times. And the girls lacrosse is a moneymaker. It's unbelievable. You could be All-American in baseball and softball in California. You ain't getting anything. You could be a second string on girls lacrosse.
But
and
Ralph,
you're going to Delaware.
Let me stop you there because I think you just said basically you've shown how the how all this has sort of has
right.
evolved over the years, and that's exactly what we're getting at. And Ralph, thank you for your call this morning. And as Ralph just outlined, you know, back in the day, you know, people who had deep pockets could say, I can dictate how this is going to work, and I don't want this kid playing, and so on and so forth. And fortunately, we have evolved to a much more enlightened state since then. And the other point he makes, which is a valid one too, that we always talk about, moms and dads, you have to be aware when your kid is now a teenager and they're feeling the heat, they're feeling the pressure to keep on winning and get better and compete and win more honors and so on and so forth. This is why we talk about burnout. Burnout tends to be something that the kids who have real talent, you know, are the ones who suffer from burnout, not the ones who just sort of say, I'm just have a middling interest in the sport. No, the kids who are really on the fast track, they get to be 13 or 14. They say, I don't want to do this anymore. It's too much pressure. I don't want to deal with this. And they walk away. And unfortunately, once they do walk away, they really don't come back to the sport. And that is a real issue. Let's move quickly over to Artie in Brooklyn this morning. Artie, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
My son now is now 17, but at the time, like a 9, he wanted to be a soccer player, a professional soccer player.
Yeah.
So I put him, I found a rec team at my church, and they had tryouts. So like 40 kids showed up. And I'm like, George, let's go. He goes, what do you mean? I said, George, there's tryouts here and stuff like that. He was not developed. Like, he wasn't as athletic as those other kids. None of them. So they talked to me and they said, listen, we don't have a coach. If you want a coach, you could put George on the team. I said, I don't think that's fair. And he goes, listen, you donated your time. You could put George on the team. It's okay. So I did. I coached. He played 3 minutes the whole year. He touched the ball once. And then he came to me and goes, Dad, I don't think I want to be a professional soccer player anymore because he realized he just wasn't as good. But that was the best 3 minutes of his life. Now, the people that volunteer, I think they put more pressure on their kid. The coaches who coach like you, Rick, who said, all right, I know that, you know, I'm going to sit out my son first and stuff like that. Most of the coaches don't do that. Coaches coach because they want their son to get the best and play shortstop and at third. And then it puts, look, they do it because of the benefit of the son, but they're actually the parents and the other teammates, they, no matter how good he is, they're going to say it's because your dad is the coach, and
that's
they
right.
put so much pressure on him. So I think that's something that they definitely have to think about. All right, thanks for taking the call, Rick. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Artie. And I agree with you 100% that this is – yeah, there are concerns that sort of the ramifications. If you're the coach at the youth level, the other side of the coin is that your son or daughter are going to feel like, well, you know, you're getting all the playing time because you are the coach's kid. That's not a good situation either. And as I said before, you have to be so sensitive to what you're doing, how you do it. I always tell youth coaches, particularly at the elementary level, your major job is to basically have a smile on your face, to make sure that your youngster is treated equally like every other kid in the team, and you offer total positive encouragement. You're trying to teach the kids how to enjoy the sport, how to master some skills, whatever sport it may be. But again, and this is where I think this is where the real sort of issues begins to crop up. If you are really focused on if your team is going to win the third grade league championship, if that's the main reason you're coaching at the youth level, then you don't have the right balance. You've lost your perspective. Your priorities are out of whack. You got to understand that at the young levels, it's not so much about whether or not you win or you lose, but all the kids enjoy playing the sport. Again, we're talking about kids who are 6, 8, 10 years old. They are a long ways away from going through adolescence and developing their full real skills in that sport. The biggest criteria, it's my way of thinking at the youth level, is if the kids had a good time playing for you that year and they want to come back the following year and want to continue playing. That, to me, is the litmus test as to whether or not you're a good coach at the youth level. And again, if you migrate or a so-called advance into travel teams, I mean, that's a concern as well because – the travel team for most of these, you know, coaches today, the daddy ballers, again, that gives them the opportunity to say, okay, now I can, you know, advance my kid to a higher level, better competition, and I can surround him or her with other kids who are pretty good talent as well, but I can also charge for tryouts. I can select who I want on the team. I can make some money off this by basically, because it's all unregulated, and we've talked many times about this is exactly the kind of situation where there should be somebody to be a commissioner of youth sports to oversee all these travel teams. But the fact is, how many times have I heard from parents that my kid made the local travel team, which is run by a very nice dad, but my kid doesn't get much playing time, and yet I'm still have to go take my kid all around the area to away tournaments and pay for all this, and the kid doesn't play much. I mean, it's just, that's heartbreaking as well. And again, there's nothing you can really do about it to straighten this out. All right, let me take a pause again. Before we go to the break, and when I come back on the other side, we'll take your calls again about daddy ball and why I feel that daddy ball is the source of all concerns when it comes to problems these days in sports parenting. We're taking your calls, of course, at 1-877-337-6666. But don't forget, you can get to Barclays Center on Friday, March 6th, when the Brooklyn Nets take on the San Antonio Spurs. The first 10,000 in attendance, first 10,000, will receive a Dr. J Black Panther bobblehead as part of Marvel Superhero Night. You can purchase tickets at brooklynnets.com/tickets.
Stay right here for more of Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge on The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hey, don't forget, at 9 o'clock this morning, just a few minutes from now, Ed Randall will be here. And, of course, Ed will be talking baseball with you. And, of course, he always has a great lineup of guests and interviews. Again, Ed Randall at 9 o'clock this morning talking baseball. And don't forget to check out my website, my blog at AskCoachWolf.com. And to get a copy, if you want, so if you're a youngster, about the mental aspects of playing sports and how to prepare for games and practices, pick up a copy of Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. You can go to Amazon and get it either in print form as an ebook, or you can get it as an audiobook as well. Again, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed, because I say all the time, all our kids spend a lot of effort putting into time and energy about their physical aspects of playing sports, but they don't really spend much time on the mental preparation. So check it out. We're talking this morning, we have an open forum about daddy ball, and to remind all sports parents and coaches that you got to do the right thing when it comes not just to your own kids, but for all the kids who play on your team when it comes to youth-level sports. And we're taking calls at 1-877-337-6666, as I do think a lot of the concerns and problems we have with sports at the high school level, you can probably find a lot of those roots going all the way back to daddy ball when the kids were first starting out. Let's go to Coach Tom over in North Arlington. Hey, Tom, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good. I haven't talked to you in a while. Things are good?
Yeah, things are good. I keep my voice off while other people talk. I don't want to try and dominate. but anyway, I would say, looking at it again from a younger standpoint, at the local youth levels, if someone goes out and becomes a manager for the express purpose of giving an advantage to their kid, there's really not a heck of a lot you can do about that, other than at the league level, maybe somebody else intervening. I don't see that as the major problem. I see it as the people who go out and truly want to be volunteers and they end up doing what you just said,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, unintentional or the fact that, this is my kid, I'm coaching him, but you know what, you're around him more than any other parents are around their kids. Or the other side, which I found out to be just as big a problem, was something you said, you purposely sat your kid to show everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do that too, and that's unfair in the other way, not the way you ended up doing it, but they yell at their kid more and things like that. And to me, I had a friend once that had a similar problem, and I would say what you had said before about the getting high school kids involved. That's probably one of the best things you can do. And as far as it would be great if nobody was coaching their own kid, that's not going to happen because of the lack of volunteers.
Yeah.
If you're a coach and you honestly do not want to run into that problem, I would say make sure you have a really, really good assistant coach.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying preferably someone who's not a parent, but sometimes you can't. And I've seen this work. You don't, like, if I had a son and was playing, I would say, okay, I don't talk to my kid, period.
Yeah.
Okay? If there's a correction that's got to be made or something, I tell the assistant coach, tell him this. You know, tell him, you know, and obviously when you get home, there's going to be a lot of talk anyway. But just for that appearance, and it gives you a chance yourself as a coach to sit back and listen to somebody else scold or instruct your son. And that's almost like being without it yourself, and I think that's a really, really good opportunity.
Tom, these are all excellent points, and I hope the people who are tuning in this morning are listening to this, because it is important, as you say, first of all, getting an assistant coach who actually knows the sport and knows how to work with kids. And to your point, you know, then if you're the head coach and you feel awkward about basically, you know, trying to instruct your kid or discipline your child, let the assistant coach do that. It helps in the transition, teaching the youngster to work with other grown-ups, other authoritarian or authority figures. It's important that kids learn how to respond to other people beyond their parents. The other thing you mentioned, and I've heard this many times, a lot of coaches, the volunteer coaches, will basically say, okay, everybody on the team, you know, we're going to run, you know, five sprints. But then he turns to his son and say, you're going to run eight, just because he wants his kid to get extra practice or more reps or whatever it might be, as though somehow the kid is entitled to more coaching from the team. That's not good either.
No.
You know, you got to treat the kids equally. Everybody does the same amount of work, the same amount of reps, everything.
Yeah, well, and proving that you're not partial to your kid by yelling at him more or anything else,
yeah.
Number one, it's unfair to your son. Number two, all you're doing is drawing more attention to that effect. Other people are, look, you know, he only coaches his own kid or, you know, or whatever. And like you said, it's you want to treat everybody equally. That's like impossible. Okay, we both know that. You try, but certain people can take certain things, other people can't. Being your relative or one should not be one of the things you have to think about as a coach,
yeah.
Especially while the game is going. That's why I think a really good assistant coach, is important. Thanks, Rick. Take care.
Thanks, Tom. And one other thing I'll throw into the mix as well from Tom's good call, and that is if you're the head coach, and, of course, you got a lot of things going on during the course of a practice or a game. I mentioned before about keeping a scorecard about who gets and when and how long they play and so on, what positions they play. Lean on your assistant coach and say, look, if I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing or I'm saying things I shouldn't be saying, please, as the assistant coach, you know, step up, have the courage to tell me and say, Rick, you shouldn't be doing that, or you back off a bit, or you're getting too excited. Again, that's what we're trying to do, the appearance to all the parents, all the grandparents who go to the games, and to the kids. Let's make sure we keep this on an upbeat level. Everybody goes away happy. Be nice to win. Sometimes we lose. And by the way, I will just say this as well. I'm not ever advocating that we shouldn't keep score. Yeah, you can keep score of your kids' games because the kids want to know who's winning, who's losing. That's fine. Just don't become so preoccupied with the final score or who wins the title or the championship. It's not that important when the kids are in second or third or fifth grade. It's not that big a deal. Understand that. Let's move on to Jackie over in Hewitt out in Long Island. Jackie, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning. First time, long time. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I wanted to make a couple of points. I believe that I have a different perspective because we have a daughter. My husband and I grew up in a time when girls really didn't get much of a chance to go through the Little League system. And we had a daughter who, of course, when she was very young, we realized that she had a lot of athletic ability. And we also, everybody's human and thinks that their kid is the best athlete that they've ever seen. And it's hard to resist that. But we entered her into the Little League system, and I wanted her to experience Little League, even though she's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have Title IX, and I'm also guilty of wanting, you know, her to, I wanted to live through her. I wanted her to be able to go through the Little League system, explore how good she could be. But on the other hand, we never had the dream that she was going to be a professional ball player. So I think that a lot of the parents in daddy ball, which I call mommy ball, because as much as my focus was different, I believe, than a lot of the parents, we never had the dream that she was going to be a professional ball player. I mean, I always wanted her to, you know, try out for the boys' baseball team in middle school or high school, but she feels the pressure. I mean, the girl thing and being held back a little bit because she's a girl, you know, we felt that too. But I believe that the focus should be on competitiveness too, because everybody wants to win, and we were very lucky that she had athletic ability, and I don't have a son, so I never was able to say to her that you play like a boy or you have to be better like a boy.
Yeah.
And we picked our coaches not to teach her how to be a greater ball player, because she was getting that. She was obviously good. She was a good runner. She had the skills. She could hit. She, you know, she just wanted to play. And we met up with a lot of resistance in the Little League level, and we had to really, really lean on the coaches. And I'm not shy, and my husband is very easygoing. So we actually had, a good mix where we mixed with the coaches and tried to become friends with the parents. And I guess I kind of became like a soccer mom for Little League. And I told my daughter that if all she had to do was want to play, if she was having a good time, we had three rules. You have to want to play, I have to be able to afford it, and Little League was very affordable in our town. We had a great Little League commissioner who was very egalitarian, never made her feel like she was weird for being a girl. There were some girls in the Little League. She played, and she was fabulous. But there was never any, you know, we have to get her to the next level. And, you know, we had people trying to push her out because she was very good, and she got a lot of play time. But she also didn't get the prime positions in Little League. They put her in right field and left field, a lot of the coaches, because I felt that they wanted the boys to get the shortstop and the pitching positions. And when she tried to pitch, she actually pitched very well. But oddly enough, she didn't like pitching.
Well, Jackie, let me stop you there because I'm up against the clock here. But
sure.
you bring back lots of memories for my youngest daughter, who also was a terrific athlete and played Little League baseball up until the time she was 12. And again, it sounds like your daughter was older than my daughter. But I can tell you that, and Jackie, thank you for your call this morning. I can tell you that I was very sensitive, and I was not coaching Samantha when she was coming up through youth level baseball. But certainly, it was evident that she was as good, in many cases, sometimes better than the boys she competed against. I recall when she occasionally would pitch, then she would strike out boys. I sort of felt sorry for the boys because, you know, geez, this girl just struck me out, and maybe I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, but it had to be a bit of a sting to the boys who had to go through that. But I can assure you that Title IX, of course, passed 40 years ago, was a great, great move forward when it comes to girls in sports. And I heard Jackie loud and clear that you had to sort of want your coaches to be sensitive to the desires and the dreams of the girls. And fortunately, these days, there's so many opportunities for girls to go on to play in college. And in some sports, they can go on to play professionally or go to the Olympics. It's a big deal. And again, if I ever saw any situation where I thought that Samantha was being somehow penalized for being a girl or not getting enough playing time, again, we're talking here about baseball, predominantly, male sport, I would have stepped up and said something right away. But fortunately, I never saw that. And by the time she played a variety of sports, by the time she got to be in middle school, she decided, okay, I'm going to put baseball aside. I'm going to keep playing soccer. I want to play lacrosse. I want to play basketball. And she eventually ended up being a terrific lacrosse player. But again, all during those developmental years, I was trying, as a sports parent, trying to be very cautious and sensitive as to what was going on, because I didn't want her to feel like she was being left out or getting shortchanged because she was a girl, or because of the fact that some coaches felt that, nah, she's not going anywhere as a girl in baseball, we'll just let her sit on the bench. And that did not happen, and that's good news. So it's not all bad news when it comes to daddy ball. But again, you really have to be sensitive to make sure that you're doing things the right way. If you're coaching, get a really good assistant coach. Consider getting a high school kid or a college kid to help out with the team, and that'll keep you on the straight and narrow. And that to me is the key in all this. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Pete Kennedy. Please stick around for Ed Randall. He's in the On Deck Circle. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.